When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello and welcome to Football Social Daily on the very last day of 2020. And good riddance, I think most of us can say to this year, unless you're a Liverpool fan, probably. There's a slight difference about today's episode. Even the sports social team need a day off every now and again. So today we're doing something a little bit different. Earlier in the year, we released a new series of podcasts called Football Stories, which was slightly longer interviews with people from football that you don't always hear from. The likes of physios and youth players. And as is the case today, Mark Halsey, Premier League referee. If you like this show, there's loads more where it came from in our Football Stories series. You can search Football Stories wherever you find your podcast. Click subscribe and get the rest of the podcast there. But enjoy this, a little sample of our new podcasting football series, Football Stories. And Premier League Daily returns on the 2nd of January.
When I was thinking to myself, Mark, is my body telling me now that time's now to pack in? Because you missed that incident, and my body's telling me, Mark, I can't go on anymore. Perhaps my body just started to shut down.
This is Football Stories, a podcast that delves into the world of sport and finds some of the more interesting stories from within football. Now, most of this series is from names that perhaps you might not have heard before, but hopefully stories that you will have recognised from football, some of the big moments from the Premier League down the years. Well, you'll definitely will have recognised today's name, but you might not have heard him talking about his career before, because it is Premier League ref Mark Halsey, ex-Premier League ref, I should say. And it's sometimes easy to forget that referees are people. They just become the figures of abuse. They're very rarely praised for what they do on the pitch. And I thought it would be great to get the view of a referee about his time in the game, particularly a referee who spent 14 years as a fixture in the Premier League. We're going to talk about his time in the top flight, his opinions on refereeing in the modern game, and why he decided to walk away from the sport after coming back from cancer in 2009. Mark Halsey is the referee.
Yeah, fine, thanks, Jim. Yourself?
Yeah, really good, thanks. I want to start, as is sensible with all these things, at the start. I've always wondered what makes someone become a referee in the first place, because for me, it seems like a bit of a thankless task being the man in the middle. So I want to know, did little Mark Halsey, age six or whatever, always have that ambition to be a top-class referee?
Absolutely not, Jim. Always wanted to be a player, always wanted to do well as a player. I remember starting out in my school junior team as a centre midfield. And in my first ever game, I knew I wasn't going to be an outfield player. So I was then the next game promptly put in goal. And that's where I stayed all through my school term, playing in goals. Loved it, playing in goal. I played in a Saturday and Sunday team, junior team. We had a good side. I remember playing for our team called Walnut Wanderers, and then we changed our name to Hatfield. I had some great times. Got picked up in my early days with Tottenham. I was there till I was 16, and then was released. Wasn't giving it 100%. I wasn't sure if that's what I wanted to do. Drifted out of football, and then back into non-league.
Do you think that gives you that kind of experience? I mean, compared to someone like me, for example, having played at a reasonable standard till 16 gives you a little bit of insight into the game. Do you think that helps you in how you manage a game when you became a professional referee, that understanding of how it works on the pitch?
Yeah, I think, obviously, I played with a lot of guys that I refereed on a Sunday morning when I first started out. When I first packed in playing football, well, I think it was when I was about 28, 29, because I just fell out of love with the game. And I said to the guys that, I might think about becoming a referee, try and put something back into it. They said, oh, you must be joking. And I thought to myself, well, what am I doing becoming a referee? Because that's the last thing I wanted to do. So it was quite easy for me because a lot of the guys I played with, played against, I was then refereeing them on a Sunday morning in the Welling Hatfield Sunday League, and then again in the Hearts County League on a Saturday where I began my career. It doesn't necessarily mean that you've played the game, you're going to become a good referee. And for me, I was quite fortunate really because when my friend said to me, "Do you fancy taking up refereeing?" And I said, "You absolutely no chance. You can go and do one." Obviously, I can't use the language that was used on this show. And I played for his Sunday team, and he was the centre half, and I played in goals for him. And there was a team called Wellingborough that played in the Welling Hatfield Sunday League. And I've got to say, he was one of the most dirtiest players I've ever played with. He was, referee's back was turned. He'd give someone a kick or give someone an elbow in the face and up, and he become a referee. So. Because I used to, when the football season finished, I loved cricket. I loved playing cricket, and I played for my local team was Hatfield High Cricket Club. I played for them for 20 odd years, and his garden backed onto our cricket, onto our cricket field. And every time we used to walk around the boundary, he was there waiting for me. Old mate Russell, God bless him, he's no longer with us. Unfortunately, COVID got the better of him, which was very unfortunate, and lost a dear friend. But he always used to go and come on, Mark, blah, 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 wait, come on. Take up refereeing, I think you'll be okay. So I thought about it this one particular summer, and I thought, do you know what? I said to him, yes, I will take it up. I said, but I'm not taking the 8-week course. There's no way on earth am I going every Thursday to do a course to become a referee. I said, give me the laws of the game. I'll read the laws of the game and then see if you can get me tested, and then we can go that way. And I read the laws of the game, got tested, and there I was out refereeing on a Sunday morning and Saturday afternoon.
So what was the shift
never
in your
head? Never looked back.
What was the moment that, because you've gone from there, from going, there's no chance I'm going to be a referee, I've seen the abuse we get, I've played the game, I've probably shouted at a referee myself, I don't want to do it, and then you've suddenly gone, nah, all right, I'll give it a go. So what changed in your psyche?
I don't know. It's just something I felt, I'm going to give it a go. And I felt, when I did play, I always used to like referees that had good banter, good chat, and allowed the game to flow. And I took that into my refereeing, And I think what helped me as well was working on the shop floor, becoming a supervisor, becoming a manager, and all the banter you have with the workers, and I think that set me in good stead as well. It's not just about refereeing to the laws of the game; it's about managing the game of football, managing the players, having banter with the players, engaging with the players, laughing with the players, joking with the players. You've got to have that, and that's something I took into my games, and I had that all the way through. I refereed no differently on a Sunday morning. So I refereed, I was lucky enough to reach the top, the elite, FIFA, I'll become a FIFA referee.
Yes.
I just took that into all my games. And I think it kept me in good stead because, I'm like any other referee. Of course I've made mistakes, but it's how you deal with and treat players. The game of football's the same from grassroots right way up to professional level. Well, the only difference is, on the way, your players get better and better and better, and the different surrounds, the stadiums become a lot bigger and a lot better.
A referee's still given that room to have that relationship with players, because you quite often see a referee having a joke with a player on the pitch and they'll be pillared by pundits or fans going, oh, it's a serious game, you shouldn't be having a laugh. It doesn't really seem like that dynamic exists anymore so much, maybe with a lot of the refs anyway.
We get players like that. You can referee with it. You can still referee with a bit of common sense. You can. Get your players on your side. Players know the referees. Players know what they can get away with and what they can't get away with referees. They know the weak referees. They know the strong referees. They know the referees who they can have a laugh and a banter with. I had banter with all the players, from Sunday morning, Arts County League, all the way up through my leagues, up to the professional level. I can't say on your podcast what language was used. Yeah, shop floor language was used all the time. I used to have some great conversations or great chats with Danny Murphy. He was at Liverpool, Tottenham, Fulham. Yeah, we used to go hammer and tongs at each other. Steven Gerrard, Alan Shearer. Patrick Vieira, you know, Ronaldo, I used to have some right conversations with him. Hey, don't you be going down easy today because you'll get absolutely nothing out of me today. And he'd look at me and he wouldn't go down easy. It's about doing your homework and getting in their heads. And in the tunnels, I used to go along the line and say to the players, hey, listen, hey, I remember what you done with me last time. Yeah, you caught me out that time. You won't be getting me this time, hey. You know what I mean? Mm. So you talk with them all the time. And, you know, refereeing is not a science. It's an art. Yes, you do make mistakes, but long as you have that engagement and that rapport with the players, sometimes you can get away with it. And listen, I made mistakes from a kid. I missed challenges where I should have given red cards. And you know, sometimes when you do that and you go home, you think, how have I missed that? How on earth have I missed that? And you're gutted. You know, you feel sick in the stomach. But that's the way it is. That it's human. You know, we're all human. You can see even with VAR at the present, we're still making mistakes, even though we've got VAR. But I still referee. I referee in a veterans league. I still play. I've gone back to playing goalkeeper. I'm 59 years of age. I'm the number one in our veterans
Fair
team.
Play.
I'm the oldest player, 59. I'm still diving around like the cat. Listen, it's about showing empathy. I played last week and I was really embarrassed. We was playing in a friendly. I mean, so I, sometimes I live a little bit out in Spain. I'm backwards and forwards. So we have a playing a team called Orihuela Costa Vetrianos, and we were playing a team called Guadalajara, and we were doing well. You know, we were playing well, and they had a lot of younger players than us, because you can have any age, but you can have five players that are from 30 to 35. You know, our defence is about an average age of about 45, and then all these teams have their 30s to 35 seems to play up front, and they're a lot quicker than us. Mm. So we had this referee on Sunday. I mean, listen, God bless him. He could hardly walk, but he was giving decisions from the halfway line. And this, he gave this decision to Guadamar, and he gave a deliberate pass back. And it was a fantastic challenge, a great tackle. So I've come out and dived on the ball, picked the ball up, and he's given a free kick. So, okay, he's a referee. You know, let him have it, and no problem. You don't argue. With a back pass, what is the law on a back when a referee gives a free kick for a back pass?
Indirect free kick, is it?
Yeah, indirect free kick. So, you know, can you score from that or can you not?
No.
Thank you. But anyway, so first of all, right, he gives the free kick. He doesn't give the free kick inside the box. He takes the ball outside the box. The centre forward shoots. Me knowing the laws of the game, he don't put his arm, but it's an indirect free kick. So I let the ball go in the goal and get the ball and take a goal kick. And he gives a goal. He gives a goal. So I just lost it. Because knowing the laws of the game, I shouldn't have done it. But I went running after him. I said, he's a Spanish referee and they speak a little bit of English. I said, referee, it's indirect. I said, it's indirect. You can't score from an indirect free kick. He said, no, new rule. Come in this season. And I just went, oh, I don't believe this. And their players were saying, yeah, it's a new rule. So I got home, I said, this ain't a new rule. I mean, I'm up on the laws of the game. So I got home, I've got the law up. And I just photocopied it and sent it to him, the away team to say, listen, these are the laws. And I sent it in Spanish so they understood it. So I was fuming. And, you know, but you can understand sometimes. And I thought to myself, Mark, what are you doing? You're a referee, you should be doing that. Mm. But listen. Yeah, we all have a little bit of red mist now and again, don't we? Even us referees.
It's obviously it was a long time between you going and reading that book for the first time, going through the rules and deciding you were going to be a referee to finally reaching the Premier League. That happened in 1999. It was, as I said earlier, a start of 14 years in the top flight. First game, I believe, was Wimbledon versus Coventry.
Wimbledon Coventry.
What was it like stepping out onto the pitch as a...
1-1, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah. Well, you tell me.
Did I win a penalty as well, I think? In that game, Coventry, I think.
Did you get the same buzz stepping out onto the pitch as a referee as you would have as a player, do you think? Was it the same experience of kind of...
Oh, yeah, listen. Yeah, you're stepping out in world's number one league. And of course you have nerves. Yeah, very nervous. You're very nervous until you blow that whistle. You blow that whistle and then you get into it and then... Refereeing is like, you know, you've got to be confident. You've got to have confidence in yourself. And it's no different to players. In any sport, everything's about confidence. And refereeing is exactly the same. You know, you give that first decision, whether it's a big key match decision in the first few minutes or it's a little decision. You know, you give that and it's right. And all of a sudden, your body language all changes. And then you start becoming confident, more confident as the game goes on. So, yeah, listen, it's all about confidence. And listen, there's no one who had nerves like me before a game. Mm.
What goes through your head? Do you want to make an impact? Do you want to kind of be noticed or do you just want to let the game... How does it work?
Absolutely not. Well, it's not about referees. It's not about us. It's about the players. and it's about, you know, entertainment, and it's about the fans. It's not about us referees. I used to love it if I could just go out there, referee a football match with no yellow cards, no red cards. That was my aim. I mean, obviously, yeah, obviously that's never going to happen. It did happen on a few times. I remember refereeing the Sheffield City derby, you know, United and Sheffield Wednesday. No yellow cards. They couldn't believe it. It was unheard of, but I did. So, you know, yeah, it's great. But no, listen, for me, it's about going out there and refereeing the game of football, and refereeing for the players, and, you know, trying to make it enjoyable for them and for the third team, the match officials, because we're entitled to enjoy it and enjoy ourselves as well. Although we've got a job to do.
You mentioned your relationship with the players earlier. In that game alone, there were some big personalities. I mean, Coventry would have had Gary McAllister, Wimbledon would have had John Hartson at that time as well. They were the types of players who wouldn't have been afraid to tell you what they thought, maybe even being a little intimidating at times. Did you get many Premier League footballers that when you were refereeing tried to intimidate you into making decisions? And I'm thinking of Patrick Vieira's and Roy Keane.
They would try and, I would give back as good as they give me. Same with managers. You know, you go down that tunnel, no one sees what happens down that tunnel. But most of the time, we have to walk past their dressing room and they sort of stand there waiting for you and giving you a little bit of in the ear. And you just, a few expletives and a few expletives back. And in your dressing room, you go have your cup of tea and then ring in the bell to get out for the second half. It's all mind games. You've got to be mentally tough and mentally strong and just show them, listen, hey, say what you want, but, I'm in charge out here and away we go.
Did you have a nemesis, like a player that you really disliked refereeing, that you knew it was going to be a hard afternoon when you saw him on the team sheet?
No, listen, I mean, when you used to referee players, I used to love refereeing Roy Keane, Paul Scholes, fantastic players. But, with Roy Keane, you knew what you get. And if he was unhappy, you're always talking, don't do it, easy, challenge, easy, Scholesy, Keano, take it easy, don't go in, easy, But if he wanted to pick up a caution, a yellow card, for a challenge, he would make sure, he would do it. He wouldn't go behind your back and do someone behind your back. He would do it, he would put in that challenge in front of you. So, and you used to acknowledge you, give him your card, no problem, Mark, I deserve that. But I think, there's many players that I always got on with. And I think there was one player, I got on well with Danny Mills, great player, but he was on the pitch, he's always in your ear, always whinging and moaning about everything. But that's the way it is, That's the way it is. They do that to see what they can get out of you and see if you can find out if you're weak. But, they knew what they were going to get out of Mark Halsey. And, and I sort of enjoyed me career. I mean, when I did retire, I missed the banter. But it's even now I still, speak to a lot of them and we have their numbers and we text and speak and talk about what's going on and decisions even to this day.
There's a few times you caught the headlines through the years, not least was with a bit of personal news when you were diagnosed with throat cancer. Now, for anyone, that news is a massive shock that they've got cancer. But for someone who considers themselves fit and healthy, who spends their life in sport, it must be doubly so, I guess.
It was difficult times because that year, I think January the 1st, my wife was diagnosed with leukemia, myeloid leukemia, and she's still battling that now. Then come to August 2009, I was diagnosed with throat cancer with a tumour. Oh. So yeah, it was, I always remember receiving the news 2 days before I was refereeing the first 5:30 game. It was Everton Arsenal on, I think it was ESPN. I think it was on. It was on live then. And it was a big decision whether I went to referee that game or not. And because I knew on the Monday I was in the Beaumont in Bolton having an operation. So yeah, it was very, very, very tough times that year for us both. For my wife Michelle and me and our daughter Lucy. It was very, very tough and I've come through it. I mean, I was told that may not survive, but if I did, I would never, ever, ever referee again at the top level. And I just thought that was the inspiration I needed to go and show them I could. So I'm very lucky and thankful at this present, especially to that wonderful hospital, the Christie, and my professor, Tim Illich.
How important was it you to make that return to the top flight? You said it was a motivating factor. Do you think it contributed to you being able to beat the cancer, to have that kind of that point of, I want to get to where I was before?
Yeah, I think for me, I think it was to set out and be an inspiration for everybody that had been battling cancer and going through chemotherapy, radiotherapy like I went through, me knowing exactly what it was like, because I had a lot of down days, a lot of down days. So, yeah, I just, you know, when, especially when I came back, at, you know, when I got back into the Reserve League of the Football League and then into the Football League, and then obviously every game was fantastic. And then obviously getting back, doing me friendly before the season started at Goodison Park, which, you know, I had a great affinity for Everton Football Club and their fans because they know the game of football, and I always got a rousing reception, even before me illness there. And I remember going back doing a pre-season friendly against Everton Chile from... and 26,000 fans, and they presented me with a little memento, and the reception I got was you know, I'll remember that for the rest of my life, as I did at a lot of football clubs, you know. But that was stick with me, and I remember my first football league game at Rotherham, you know, the reception I got there is, they always stick with me for the rest of my days.
It was your cancer that shockingly became a focus of some of the abuse you received via social media, via Twitter a couple of years later, and it came after you sent off Jonjo Shelvey in a Liverpool match versus Manchester United. Now, I'm sure, and I might be wrong, but I'm sure that's probably not the first piece of abuse you received via social media or any other, but you ended up contacting the police on that occasion. Why was it that was the breaking point for you?
Well, listen, I mean, to be fair, over my career, that was the first really serious abuse that I received. You know, I like to thought that I was, people regarded me as a fairly decent referee, a referee that allowed the game to flow, didn't like you sending off or producing yellow cards, always gave players a chance. And I think when it... See, if abuse didn't bother me, you know, going one ear out the other, it's part of course. That's the nature of the beast that we're in, you know. And you accept that, and people pay their money, and they can, you know, if they want to shout abuse at you. You see a lot of abuse, a lot of players getting upset now, you know, quite rightly so, when you hear racial comments, and we don't want to hear that because, you know, it's not right. But, you know, some of the abuse us referees used to get... You know, was way below the belt, and we have to put up with it, and you got to be mentally tough. But when the abuse is directed at then my young daughter, who was 4 or 5 years of age, and my wife, who was battling leukemia, then you know that's when you draw a line, because they got nothing to do with this. And some things that were said about my daughter. You wouldn't believe. You would not believe some of the things that were said about my daughter, an innocent little girl, and you wouldn't believe what they wanted to do to her. So you we'll leave that at that. You can use your imagination.
I think anyone who's a parent can probably see exactly where you're coming from and can understand where you're coming from as well. Does that kind of abuse ever make you question yourself in terms of the decisions you make on the pitch? You go, well, if that person feels really strongly, maybe I did get it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a couple of times. I think that was the season I decided that was it for me. I think that was the 2012-13 season. There was a couple of things that happened in that season, and normally I don't miss things, or I don't miss. There was an incident at Wigan, Newcastle, where there was an horrendous challenge by McManaman on a Newcastle player, and my view was blocked by a player, and I just didn't see it. No one reacted, and when I saw the challenge, and I thought, how have I missed that? That's an awful challenge. And then you start to question yourself, because I obviously sometimes I was sitting in the dressing room thinking, do you know what, I don't want to go out for the second half, because I put my body through so much in coming back and getting myself fit. My body was starting to shut down because of the chemo and the radiotherapy that I went through. And I was questioning myself, and I was thinking to myself, Mark, is my body telling me now that time's now to pack in, because you missed that incident, and I missed another incident, and you start questioning yourself mentally, and you're thinking, do you know what? I think perhaps this is it for me. I think my body's telling me something. My body's telling me, Mark, you know, I can't go on anymore. You know, the rigorous training regime we have to put in, and obviously with what I've gone through with my treatments, and perhaps my body just started to shut down.
The second biggest headline you received was after you stepped out of the game. It was back in 2016 when you said, I think it was on social media, you said it originally, that you'd been directed to say you'd missed in-match incidents that you'd witnessed during the game.
Yeah, I think that's just just typical media and everything jumping on something. I mean, listen, it happened once, and what it was is it was a game at Britannia Stadium between Stoke and Blackburn. Obviously, you have Nessessa there, big, you had Ngonzi for Blackburn, Ryan Shawcross, two big players, and went at each other, hammer and tong, which is you like to see battles. And there was challenges going on, and there was nothing. Untoward, and Sessa, game had finished, everyone shook hands, Sessa come in, well done Mark, excellent game, no problems at all, we didn't pick anything up. And I remember because on the Sunday I'd been notified that my good friend Gary Speed had sadly lost his life. That was devastating. I remember me assessor phoned up and said, I've just seen the incident on Match of Day, do you not think that perhaps that challenge by Nzonzi was a yellow card? I said, listen, look, for me, no. I said, but listen, if you want to put that, you didn't say anything about it in the dressing room, but if you want to put that in your report, I don't care, because what happened with Gary, that was it. I wasn't bothered. So, listen, we had the meeting. It was a difference of opinion. The management come to me and said, look, watch this. I believe this challenge here is a red card. I said, well, I don't. He said, but I do. And that was all it was. He said, well, that's a red card challenge. You need to inform the FA. And that was it. It was a difference of opinion, and my only regret on that day was that I should have been stronger, and I should have just said, no, I'm not changing from what I'm not re-refereeing the game, I should have been stronger, so I blame myself that day, that's all it was. In any walk of life, if your manager tells you to do something, you have to do it, and that's all it was.
The latest news about your team, the biggest stories from your terraces, the most exciting moments from your week. Forget the clickbait and listen to real fans bringing you real news every single day from the Premier League. Listen and subscribe now wherever you find your podcasts by searching Football Social Daily.
I suppose that is the challenge of a referee, isn't it? On one part, you're there to make sure the rules are obeyed, but on the other hand, you just need to make sure it's kind of fair. And I guess that's where what you say about you referee with common sense, that kind of comes into play.
Jim, just let me give you a yellow card there. It's the laws of the game, okay? Not the rules.
Sorry.
Yeah, listen. Yeah, you always, as a referee, you always get that opportunity to stamp your authority on the game. And it don't necessarily mean it's with a yellow card or just verbally sometimes, you stop the game, your body language, you call the player and you call the captain and say, right, and you give them you give them a rollicking verbally. And then players know where they are. I mean, listen, there are occasions where you just can't manage. There are occasions where, a reckless challenge comes in and you can't manage it. You've got to give a yellow card, or a serious foul play challenge comes in, a challenge that endangers the player's safety with excessive force, whether it's his first challenge or not. You can't manage them. You can't manage an act of violent conduct. Just bang, red card, and off they go. Yeah, you referee with a smile on your face. As I always say, you can smile with the players, you can joke with the players, but when you get that chance to stamp your authority on the game, you must do that. And that's at any level, whether it's grassroots or, semi-professional or professional football. It's no different with the players. All the players are the same mentally. And it's like, it's having awareness of what's going on around you. If you're not aware or physically, mentally fit for that game, you're gonna lose control of that game, because if you're not aware of the little niggles that are going on around the field of play, like the 9 and 5, the 5's just clear passed the ball out to his right back, and all of a sudden number 9 just catches him late, and you don't see that, you don't keep your gaze vision, and you don't give that, then that 5's gonna think, well, the referee's letting that go today, I'm gonna give him a little bit back, and then obviously then you've got loads of little niggles, and then you're getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 yellow cards because you've not picked up that first instant in the first 5 minutes, a little niggle. You keep your gaze vision, you see that little challenge, you're playing advantage, I've seen that, cut that out. So it's about reading the game and being aware of what is going on around you.
You mentioned authority being important as a referee. Now, for me, some of that authority is being taken away by one of the biggest changes in terms of refereeing, I guess, which would be the introduction of video refereeing. This is a time when referees are under huge pressure anyway, probably more so than they have been in a long time. Do you think VAR in itself undermines the job that you were doing?
No, listen, I personally think VAR is good for the game, okay? If... And that's a big if. it's implemented correctly. And we're not seeing it, in my opinion, implemented correctly. Well, we're seeing it. We're seeing a change, because I know I've been one of the biggest guys crying out for that the on-field referee, as the IFAB protocol says, the on-field referee must make that final decision. And that's why FIFA have got in this year, and they've warned the Premier League, if they don't start following the protocol, then they'll have their licence taken away. The referee has to go to that monitor on subjective decisions. And now we're seeing that this season, because they've been forced to. And that's how they should have been operating it from the first place. The on-field referee must make that final decision. Whether he goes across the screen and sticks with his original decision, and you still don't agree with it, at least everybody would accept that and respect it.
Do you think it was introduced too soon? Do you think it wasn't trialled enough? It's ridiculous that you're having these discussions about the changes of rules, whether it's a FIFA directive, a FIFA directive, or whether it's something decided by the Premier League, but you're having these discussions whilst the competition is running. That seems like a crazy situation to be in.
Yeah, well, listen, if you look at that, they've been practicing, you know, trialing this and getting training on the VAR for about three or four seasons now. So it's about the quality of referee. And I have to say, I think that the standard has declined. Well, listen, we've got some great, really good referees out there. I mean, for me, Michael Oliver is our top referee. You've got Martin Atkinson, love or hate him, Mike Dean, you know, who's not afraid to make a decision. Anthony Taylor. So we've got some good young ones coming through. Andy Madley, I think, is going to be a good referee. And I think Peter Banks. But I always say good coaches turn average players into good players into excellent players. And that's no different with referees. And at the moment, we're struggling to find... We've not got some decent top coaches that are coaching our referees at the moment. And that's obvious in the way we're refereeing. It is difficult, but I think... What I think for me is happening is that, yes, there's a directive from the PGML management, which has come down from FIFA via, you know, the IFB, then FIFA and UEFA, and now they're all sort of doing a U-turn. Now, for me, what they've done, what's happening is, why are we getting these handballs? Is that they're not implementing the laws of the game correctly. Well, they're getting confused with natural and unnatural. Okay, so. Law 12, handing the ball, OK? I'll just read it to you, OK? Right, it is an offence if a player deliberately, I stress, deliberately, touches the ball with their hand arm, including moving the hand arm towards the ball, gains possession, control of the ball after it has touched their hand arm, and then scores in the opponent's goal, creates a goal-scoring opportunity, which we all know, which we agree with that, because of the consequences of what happens next. Scores in the opponent's goal directly from their hand arm, even if accidental, including by the goalkeeper. It is usually an offence if a player touches the ball with their hand arm when the hand arm has made their body unnaturally bigger. The hand arm is above beyond their shoulder level unless the player deliberately plays the ball, which then touches their hand and arm. The above offences apply even if the ball touches a player's hand arm directly from head or body, including the foot of another player who is close. Okay, so then it goes on to say, except for the above offences, it is not an offence if the ball touches a player's hand or arm directly from the player's own head or body, including foot, directly from head or body, including foot of another player who is in close proximity. If the hand and arm is close and the body then does not make the body unnaturally bigger. So that's the law. That's the law as well, handling the ball, okay? So what they're getting confused is with natural and unnatural. And that's why we're having all these problems, because there's no leadership and direction coming from the PGMOL.
Should it be about intent? Because ultimately it's whether a player's trying to gain an advantage. And intent's not something you can prove with slow motion or replays or anything like that. Intent's in your head, surely, rather than actually something you do physically.
Listen, Jim, intent has been taken. Intent is not in the laws of the game. It's deliberately. He deliberately moves his arm towards the ball. He deliberately puts his arm in the air. He deliberately makes himself bigger. His arm's in a natural position. It's about a deliberate act. It's all about a deliberate act. Was it a deliberate act? Was it not a deliberate act?
So if you're a refereeing today, if you're in this situation, if you're still in the middle, you've got the whistle, how do you handle this situation? Because you don't feel like you're getting the leadership you need from above. You're given the task of implementing these rules on the pitch. And at the same time, you're the one that's going to get the criticism. You're the one that's going to get the stick for getting these decisions arguably wrong.
I've got a lot of sympathy for the referees because it's not their fault. They're just carrying out orders. Like I said to you earlier on, what their manager tells them, they have to do. But they could still go to that monitor. As soon as they get told to go to that monitor, then they're feeling, oh, we've got this wrong, I've got this wrong. So they're looking. So what? So you can look at that, you know, you keep looking, and it's in slow motion. Now, they've got to be looking at the monitor in real time. So if you slow things down, you can make it look like violent conduct. You can make it look like a red card challenge. You could make it look like it's handball. But I would like to see them go across it. I'd love to see. I know some of the referees, I know they didn't want to give those decisions.
You talk a lot of sense, Mark, and you talk with a lot of passion as well. Would you like to be involved in an official capacity in helping shape the way the game is managed?
Jim, absolutely. 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 But unfortunately, didn't leave on good terms with the management. So, but listen, that's gone. You know, it's about today. It's about improving and the development of referees today. Not what happened six years ago, but now. You know, everybody deserves a second chance. But this is, I enjoy what I do now with my newspaper columns and my ref lounge and Keys to Football. You know, we do a ref watch every Monday now to counteract ref watch on Sky, because as much as I respect Dermot Gallagher, he does come out with some nonsense.
Always enjoy hearing your thoughts and reading your words, Mark. You are one of the voices of reason when it comes to refereeing. Any regrets when you look back on your career? Anything you wish you'd done differently?
Yeah, I suppose we all look back and we have regrets. I think, you know, I could have been a little bit. I look back and I think I sort of sometimes I was a bit at loggerheads with management over different issues and different things. You know, I wear my heart on my sleeve and I say where it is and I say what I think. And obviously I think that upset them. But some people just toe the line and say nothing. And that's not me. I think, you know, the one thing people say to me are, you know, do you not regret ever doing the FA Cup, getting the FA Cup final? Well, yeah, I'd love to have done the FA Cup final, but obviously the face didn't fit. But I think I get something better now. I think, you know, over the course of my career, you know, the players, I always hear that the players and fans always thought I was a decent referee, a good referee. And that means more to me than anything else.
If you're going to pick one moment, I want you to imagine that on the wall of your office, there's an empty frame at the moment and you can snapshot one moment from your career and stick it in that empty frame to remind you of the pinnacle, the highlight. What would be in that frame?
I don't know. Listen, I've had some great memories, made some wonderful friends who I'm still friendly with now. Refereeing on the Premier League many years. I think if I look back, I think the day I stepped out, the 2011-12 season. I think it was Wigan Blackpool. I think it was 2011-12. My first game back in the Premier League. Mm. Well, when I was told I'd never ever referee at that level again, and the reception I got was fantastic. And stepping out on that pitch and having my boss Keith Hackett there, and my family, my wife and daughter, and the professor, Professor Tim Millage, that saved my life. I think that was. I look back on that and I think, yeah, that was. That was fantastic. That was my magic moment, you know, coming back and refereeing at the highest level.
Brilliant moment, brilliant achievement. Mark, it's been an absolute joy to speak to you. Really appreciate your time today and good luck with whatever comes next.
Thanks very much. All the best, Jim. Good to talk to you.
Great chat, and what a nice fella Mark Halsey is as well. Almost makes me feel guilty for abusing referees shouting at my TV all those years. Almost. You can check out the other shows in this series if you haven't done so already. You can hear my conversations with people like the Arsenal physios, Gary and Colin Lewin, the man behind many of Manchester United's terrace chants, Pete Boyle. And there's a really cool chat with a guy called Kieran Maguire on this series as well. He's the guy behind Price of Football. And we talk about some of the murkier dealings in football finance. A really interesting chat. Make sure you click subscribe now. You'll get all those shows whenever they're published, along with season 2, which should be out in the new year. But for now, thank you for listening. This was Football Stories.
Football Stories is a Sports Social production and part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. Hosted and produced by Jim Salverson, with additional production support and imaging from Ant McGinley.
Find more great shows or join the team at sport-social.co.uk.